This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C, and this is the Breakfast Grill. The land of smiles is feeling a little sullen. As the pandemic continues to ravage the tourism industry globally, Thailand is certainly a country not spared. Contributing one-fifth of the economy and 20% of jobs, we would be amiss to say that tourism is a lifeline for this economy. So how will Thailand welcome tourists back? And how will the industry evolve in the future? With us to shed some light on this, we have with us Mr. Chatan Kunjara, Deputy Governor for International Marketing, Asia and South Pacific for Tourism Authority of Thailand. Welcome to the Breakfast Grill, Mr. Chatan. Thailand, you welcomed close to 40 million international tourists in 2019. 2020 dropped to about 15%, about 6.7 million. What's the expectation for 2021?
Well, in terms of numbers, it's not great. I have to be honest. We will be very lucky if we reach or surpass 1 million foreign tourists this year. Okay. We are banking on Q4, the fourth quarter from October onwards. If the pandemic situation is better, restrictions are lowered, both in Thailand and overseas, you know, travel restrictions, then we can see some significant numbers. But in terms of numbers, 1 million plus is already a welcome sign. And anything that's above 1 million is fine for us.
If you reflect back, right, and you see the devastation that this pandemic has brought to the industry, quantify to us, you know, the jobs and businesses that have been affected.
In a normal year, the tourism industry would account for nearly 20% or about 20% of the country's GDP. And in 2020, last year, the GDP fell by over 6%, and many workers, especially those related to the tourism sector, lost their jobs. Many hotels remain closed or opening just partially, and the outlook for the next few months are still very bleak. Because they depend on tourists coming in and domestic travel as well, meaning Thais traveling in Thailand. So, but again, Q4 is what we're banking on as the country hopefully will open more to international travel.
Can you share with us some of those efforts where domestic tourism is trying to do some of that recovery for international, and to what extent can it recover actually?
Of course. I hope everyone has heard about the Phuket Sandbox, the reopening of our popular world-famous beach resort in southern Thailand. That reopened to international travel on July 1st. On July 15th, another island opened up, Koh Samui, in the Gulf of Thailand. Okay, also Koh Phangan and Koh Tao, two smaller islands nearby. Mm-hmm. There's a pipeline in place that will reopen other destinations. The whole country, Philip, will not reopen as yet as we grapple with the pandemic situation. But if we can get certain destinations to come clean, under control, people there get vaccinated, then places like Chiang Mai in northern Thailand will reopen later this year. Pattaya on the East Coast will reopen this year. And even we are trying a few different models calling for extensions of Phuket to Krabi Province, Phang-nga Province, and also to Samui Province, meaning there's like a pipe between the two places, Phuket to other destinations, which is called the 7+7 model, 7 days in Phuket and 7 days elsewhere before you can travel to another destination in Thailand.
The Phuket Sandbox, relatively easier to control because it's an island. Even Samui Plus is an island. You can kind of control the movement. It is going to be a bit more difficult when you start doing mainland, right? How do you mitigate and manage that then?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. We are taking the island approach. That's why we're reopening islands first. Exactly along the line that you just said, easier to control. And they're already well-known destinations by themselves, okay? The other destinations, that's why it's taking a bit longer to reopen. You are very correct in saying that it needs more planning, more preparation, because these are always open territories, open borders. You know, you can go access these places. Take, for example, Chiang Mai. You know, there are roads going in, flights can go in, and even the waterway, the rivers, you can travel along them. So, you know, it takes a bit more planning. And also, it will give us time to vaccinate people, the locals there. Mm. So the vaccination drive is ongoing. And the government is really accelerating vaccinations in those cities. So, yeah, it's a bit more of a challenge, but it's something that the timeline has not changed. For example, Chiang Mai will reopen on October 1st, if I remember correctly. So that is on schedule.
So how successful has Phuket Sandbox been? I mean, 2 months into the program, can you share with us how many tourists have arrived? And is this in line with your expectation?
So far, yes. Yes. So far, we have received up to yesterday nearly 20,000 international visitors. Okay, nearly 20,000, 19,000 plus. For us, that's a good number. Okay, basically each day we are looking at about 500 international tourists coming in. You know, direct flights from the Middle East, from Hong Kong, from Singapore, you know, many places. And what we're saying is that if today is better than yesterday, you know, in terms of numbers, people have, you know, I mean, people meaning locals, they have more money saved. They're earning something. You know, for many months, they weren't earning anything. You know, now people are saying, look, I can pay for my tuition fees, for my kids' tuition fees. I can start to rehire workers and so on. So if today is better than yesterday, then we're happy. Hopefully, you know, the traffic, inbound traffic will continue to come.
Yeah, well, I mean, 500 a day, that's actually a very small step to the bigger goal where you were initially carrying 9 million tourists per annum, which is about, I think, 25, 30,000 a day. What's the goal by end of this year? How many tourists do you expect to arrive in Phuket every day then?
Okay, let's mention the whole country. Originally, we were planning on 3 million for the whole country by the end of this year. That is a challenge, like I said at the outset. I don't know if we'll reach that because now we are experiencing our fair share of pandemic situations as well as other countries. So with the sandbox itself, right now, like I said, we're getting 20,000. By the end of the year for Phuket itself, let's say if we can reach up to 100,000, you know, that we'll be happy. We'll be happy because, again, you know, Q4 is the make or break period for us. So let's see how we do.
And do you think the recent incident involving the Swiss tourist, that kind of tarnishes the reputation and image of this sandbox? And how does Thai tourism and the Thai government address that issue?
Well, I admit it is a setback. We're not thinking that it has severely impacted what we do. You know, at least the Phuket sandbox is still running, still going ahead. But yes, safety is always a major concern. You know, something we take it very seriously. And it was so sad and very unfortunate that incident happened. And look, it's a learning process still. You know, we take everything seriously, and we have to take better care of tourists. Mm. It all comes to that, Philip. We have to take better care of tourists. And, you know, it's... hopefully we won't have any more things like that. You know, it's just sad if it happens in Phuket or anywhere else. We cannot let that happen again. Mm.
And I want to shift topic to this whole concept, right, where you have these isolated bubbles within the country. You know, we've seen this conversation on travel bubbles. Singapore tried to do Singapore-Hong Kong so many times and failed miserably at it. Australia-New Zealand, the travel bubble just hasn't really taken off. What's your perspective on travel bubbles? Yay or nay?
I laugh because I'm the one assigned by my organization to do travel bubbles with so many countries. And to date, they have not worked.
Yes.
Because it's a two-way street. You know, both sides must be really ready, must be, you know, really willing also to enter into an agreement. The basic concept, Philip, of a travel bubble is there is no quarantine on both sides. Mm. And that's really hard to do, okay? For Thailand, we have already initiated the no quarantine zone, which is Phuket, okay? We are trying really hard with certain countries I will not name to really conclude travel bubbles. It's been a continuous stream of back and forth talks, but we are hopeful that we can get something going. A travel bubble may not be necessary if everyone opens up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if the situation vastly improves, then a travel bubble is really an afterthought. However, it's an ongoing thing that we try to have happen. Sometimes it's us, sometimes it's the other side that's not ready. Depends on the situation. You know, we keep talking.
And we'll have a deeper discussion on Thailand's recovery after these messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On The Breakfast Grill today, we speak to Mr. Chatan Kunjara, Deputy Governor at the Tourism Authority of Thailand. Now, you were mentioning just now about the Phuket sandbox, and a key element of that was to get the vaccination program going for your residents. But we also see that Thailand's vaccination program is still far behind. Can you help us contrast the difference in the vaccination rate in these island resorts versus the national picture?
Yeah, because we're getting a limited number of vaccines from overseas, so we have to prioritize. So that's why the major tourist destinations, Phuket, Koh Samui, and the other cities that I had already mentioned, will be the first recipients of a major herd immunity vaccination drive to at least get 70% of the local population in those cities to get vaccinated.
By when?
Okay. Sorry?
By when?
By when, right? Well, there's a timeline. Okay, so let's say Chiang Mai is set to reopen on the 1st of October. So that's the timeline.
I see.
You know, that's what the officials are working on. And it's not only vaccination, if I may add, Philip, we also have like what is called a SHA plus certification program for hotels, that meaning that people there in a SHA plus hotel also get vaccinated first. Okay, so yeah, it's a complete, total drive to reopen. Vaccination is one part of the solution. The other is to get the city ready in other means and ways as well. Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you and put you in a bit of a spot now and apply your crystal ball. When do you think Thailand tourism will return back to pre-pandemic levels?
Oh, I ask myself that every single day. Okay. To be really honest with you, we've been, you know, attending meetings, and to get to pre-pandemic levels is really difficult. I don't see that happening soon, because you're talking about nearly 40 million tourists in 2019, okay? But the world has changed so much since then that maybe we're not having that kind of number in our minds anymore, okay? Mm. As long as people come and they travel around the country, And, you know, just we have to just distribute the flow of people better. That's why. Okay, so we'll be okay, Philip, if we don't get 40 mil a year, you know. But, you know, people will start to come back. And then, you know, if pre-pandemic, let's not go by arrivals. Let's go by revenue, okay? Mm-hmm. If we can get anything close to the revenue that we got, which was, what, 2 trillion baht or something, you know, we'll be okay. We'll be okay, yeah.
You're kind of alluding that the industry will be changing and that Thailand's strategy is to shift from mass market, which is high volume, low spend, to perhaps lower volume, lower density movement, but higher spend per tourist. Is that the strategy forward then for Thailand in pushing tourism forward?
That is correct. The Thai government as a whole, Philip, is following what is called the BCG model. Know, biocircular green economy model, meaning that there must be really very active community involvement, and we must push the tourists to spend at the grassroots level if we can. Okay. Of course, some will want to stay in the big hotels, the luxury spas, and so on. That's fine. That's fine. But at the same time, we also must push people to travel more within the country, to have this experience-based travel, you know, more in touch with the local communities, local culture, local cuisine, you know. So the strategy is indeed shifting, yes. We will not shy away from having great numbers, you know, that's fine if they come. But at the same time, we, like I said, we must distribute the flow of tourists better to more parts of the country.
China accounts for 30% of your tourist arrivals. When I hear your strategy and listen to the actions you take, it sounds like the whole concept of travel groups and large tourists with buses will be a thing of the past, which is what typically Chinese tourists do. So do you expect the makeup and structure of your tourist arrivals to change substantially in the next 5 to 10 years then?
I really do. I believe that people will start to travel by themselves more, okay, because the world is so interconnected now. You have data. You know, you're armed with your mobile phone and you can go anywhere. Of course, a lot of people, because of various things, maybe language, you know, they will still rely on tours. That's fine. But more people, especially millennials, okay, they'll want to travel on their own or with their friends. So, yeah, smaller groups, more intimate, more, you know, travel with people they know. You know, more freedom to choose their itineraries and so on. So, yeah, I don't think tours will be a thing of the past as yet, but people will gravitate more towards solo and individual and small group travels. Yes, I do think that.
And this will require quite a bit of government investment to make this work, because we are talking about building infrastructure that's more spread out. And the question in my mind is really, will the government have the appetite to do this? I mean, they have pushed out a whole series of stimuluses to help in the current situation in the short term, but you're alluding to a more longer term investment required. Does the Thai government have the fiscal capacity to help put all this in place to make this work?
I do. If we take things step by step. For example, what we are doing now, Philip, is we're opening certain destinations, okay? We're not opening the whole country. And I think that's a good approach. It is what we call city marketing. Focus the attention of development efforts. Now, this is on the supply side, right? On just one destination or only a few destinations. Do one thing at a time. And also at the same time, Philip, focus the attention of the traveler, of the markets on a destination, okay, Phuket, Koh Samui, and so on and so forth, right? So if you do that, then you're not spreading out your resources all over the place, right? You know that people are really interested in certain destinations, and you target those people. You target segments in those countries that can come to these places.
And let's localize this approach closer to home in Malaysia. What is TAT's strategy or approach to attract Malaysians back? 1 in 10 of your arrivals are from Malaysia.
Yes, and it's a huge market. And we thank Malaysians every single day for coming to us. To be very honest with you, Malaysia has been traditionally an overland destination, you know, source of tourists for us, okay? People drive up into southern Thailand, but of course they now drive up further into the country, you know? So that is a thing that we will not let go, okay? We will still promote overland travel, try to streamline everything, facilitate entry, so on, and give you more options to travel when you drive or when you take a bus or something, even rail into the country. So we will continue to promote that. But we also see, Philip, that people are also flying from, say, KL, from other destinations in Malaysia into certain parts of the country. So, you know, we want to position Thailand, if anything, as at least a weekend destination, a short trip destination, okay? We don't expect Malaysians to stay for weeks on end, for months in Thailand. That doesn't happen, okay? Which is fine, you know, as long as you think of a place to go for a short break, you come to us, you can either fly or drive up, and you know, we will continue on that tangent.
So let's just plan my next holiday. Come December, it's school holiday in Malaysia. I have 1 week off, right? What is your marketing shtick to me on why I should take my next holiday to Thailand end of this year?
Oh, that's a hard question. Okay. You know, I think people are really desperate to travel. I don't know about you, but, you know, they just want to get out, you know, and we're close by. No, that's my number one shtick for you. Okay, that number one thing for you. We're close by. You don't need to fly a long time elsewhere. I mean, of course, Malaysia is a beautiful country, but I'm sure you've traveled, you know, extensively there. So, you know, why not come to Thailand, which is just right next door? You don't need to spend a lot of money. You know, we're still very affordable, and you know, a place like Phuket, it has everything, you know, great food, beaches, relax, that's fine. You know, so we're close by and we're affordable and we got everything. So that's my take for you.
And on that note, I look forward to seeing you in person on my next holiday in Bangkok. On The Breakfast Grill today, we speak to Mr. Chatan Kunjara, Deputy Governor from the Tourism Authority of Thailand. I'm Philip C. This is The Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.